I'm Frank Vaughn. It's still September 16th, 2025, and this is going to be a bit more of a conversational one, and I want to talk about Charlie Kirk. I want to talk about geopolitics, and I want to talk about how all these things are linked and go through some of the theories that people are putting out there and talk about what I realistically think happened, or at least the things that I know firmly happened. The first thing I want to address is everybody keeps asking me. I just got another text message as to whether or not I'm going to the We Unify conference this weekend. I shared a month, 2 months ago that I couldn't make it, that there was a conflict, and I shared that with the organizers. I offered to appear virtually, but I had never received a response to the email indicating that I had such a conflict. I still think it's a good time, and I'm glad that I could help the organizers hook up with a number of other prominent YouTubers who will all be there. I was, I think, to do a panel with Clyde, but now they've got Bernier in that spot. So I don't know if I'll ever get invited again, but it is what it is. I had to do what I had to do. Now back to Charlie Kirk. Charlie was into, I shouldn't call him Charlie because I didn't know him. I should call him Mr. Kirk. I'll probably just call him Kirk. Kirk was a free thinker, and it's been surprising to me because I've seen some of his stuff, but I wasn't a dedicated follower. I didn't watch all his stuff all the time. There's only so much time everybody has in a day, right, to consume media. So there's only so much Charlie Kirk media I consumed up until he was assassinated in public before the eyes of the world. So then I started digging a little bit deeper, and I understand fundamentally why this man was dangerous to a lot of vested interests in the United States, but also around the world. It's not just a U.S. problem. Some of the stuff that Kirk was kind of counter-normative was the way that he talked about Israel and the Gaza Strip. He's a big supporter of Israel, but he was getting in trouble with some of his backers and some of his donors. You got to remember that Charlie Kirk had a huge amount of influence among a lot of people, but specifically among young people. He had his finger on the pulse. And as much as he supported Israel, he couldn't support or was really starting to be vocal about what was happening in Gaza. Look, I have resisted all of these years that I've been engaged in political thought and geopolitical thinking. I've resisted using the word genocide and the words ethnic cleansing to describe what's happening between Israel and Palestine. I prefer to call it the Gordian knot that we live a long ways away from, and we should seek to not import that conflict, as I've argued that we shouldn't be importing foreign conflicts of any kind into our country. And unfortunately, we have imported all kinds of the world's conflicts into Canada, and we celebrate it as official multiculturalism. Isn't it grand? But I can't resist calling what's happening in Gaza at this stage anymore ethnic cleansing. It is ethnic cleansing. I have to stop short of genocide. Other people can use that word and they can make their own arguments. I can't go there because I'm looking at it rationally and honestly. But ethnic cleansing is a similar thing, though not the same thing. Now, why is it ethnic cleansing? Israel is systematically leveling the entire strip. They are, as I sit here recording this, they are taking down the high-rises in Gaza City. They've already leveled Rafah. They've already leveled most of the Gaza Strip. And the government itself has signaled its intentions to take all of the people of Gaza, men, women, elderly, sick, children, everybody that's left, and they're going to be moved into a concentration camp in Rafah. They call it by some other name, but it's a concentration camp. When you forcibly take an entire people off of their land and concentrate them into a concentration camp, into a city, into an encampment, built on top of the ruins of one of their cities, Rafah, and that's your signaled intention. That's what the government says it's going to do. That's an ethnic cleansing. And you see, Charlie Kirk was a moral man. He answered to a higher power. And I know there's some people who've highlighted in the comments from the Charlie Kirk video that, or one of my last videos about the allegiance to a higher power being a dangerous thing. Everything is danger. The work is never done. So a higher power can manifest as something bad, and a higher power can manifest as something good. The litmus is morality. The litmus is maybe how aligned we are to things that are natural and normative versus in rebellion to the very fabric of what makes a human being a human. So that's one aspect of it. There's a lot of people, and the reason I bring this up first is there's a lot of people who are alleging that the Israelis took out Charlie Kirk. Have a sip of coffee. And people allege this because this is a pretty powerful time for Israel in the world. They're very assertive. They're at war on multiple fronts. They're winning territory. They're winning battles they don't intend to give back. And they have the firm and total backing of the U.S. president, most of Congress, and most of the Senate. And indeed, a large share, I don't think the majority, but a large share of the American public is happy to give Israel carte blanche in the Middle East to establish a new Israeli-led order there. And you can make arguments for it. You can make arguments against it if you wish. We could have a lengthy conversation about what that looks like. But I think we should be honest about what it actually is. That Israel's solution to the Gordian knot of the Palestinian question is absolutely removal and resettlement and an annexation, not just of Gaza, but also the West Bank. I think that's where this goes, and we can be honest about that. It's literally ethnically cleansing the Palestinians out, stopping short of calling it genocide. It's horrible what's going on. And as a person of conscience, as a person who loves my children, loves my children's friends, loves children in general, think that they should be the single most protected class in society. They're under assault from all sides. The powers that be trying to indoctrinate them into gender ideology and sexualizing them at younger and younger ages and pushing down the age of consent and saying that minor attracted people are people too and we need to understand them and accept them. Our children are under assault. But the children of Gaza are under kinetic assault. And you can say that it's all Hamas's fault. I'm always hearing this, that Hamas hides behind children and Hamas builds their bases under the daycares. And every time an Israeli bomb blows up a civilian target, it's because Hamas put it there. That's always the story. It's the same story. Maybe it occurs in most cases, but it certainly isn't all. Why are unarmed people getting shot every single day? Gaza's choked off. The people are largely unarmed. They don't have food. They don't have water. They're being herded into these humanitarian checkpoints. If you bother to look into it, they're getting shot at the entire time, treated worse than you would treat a cow. That's what's happening in Gaza. So Kirk was thinking about this sort of stuff. And he was also, from what I understand, going through questions about the source of his faith, not the Christian source of his faith, but perhaps what branch. I don't want to get into that too much. But it is very indicative, it's very instructive that in the lead up to his death, he was being summoned to private meetings with some very prominent funders and Israeli backers in U.S. politics and being asked essentially to tone down the rhetoric, to stop this ongoing revelation, this conversation that he was starting to have about Gaza. And so people derive from that they shot him. He was invited to Israel by Netanyahu, to come and kiss the wall, basically. It's what everybody has to do eventually. If he gets so powerful, it seems there's an American rite of passage where you have to go kiss the wall. So people derive from that Mossad did it. Now, I can't go that far. What I do see is Netanyahu and a lot of prominent pro-Israeli voices that don't want to talk about what's actually happening in Gaza. Look, you can be for Israel. You can be for this solution. You can make that argument. But be honest about what it's built on. Be honest about what's actually happening. It's very hard for anybody with a real and firm morality to just stand idly by and not feel obliged to say something when people who are otherwise innocent are just suffering. When they're just dismissed as collateral damage of Hamas. It's a total form of violence that's taking place. It's total war. We should just be honest about it. But Netanyahu and a lot of the, say, Israeli backers have been really trying to frame Charlie Kirk's imprint in the Judeo-Christian narrative, which some people say that they're flying cover for this assassination operation that they did. At this point, you know, I see more of a PR campaign than anything, because Charlie was doing things. Charlie was saying things. He was stepping outside the narrative. And the thing about this very public assassination, which, I mean, there's some problems with the story, but I mean, the investigation's still ongoing, but I don't think the shooters were standing right beside him. I mean, I've reviewed the footage that everybody else is looking at. I think it's pretty straightforward. Rifle shot from whatever distance from that rooftop. I think it's pretty obvious what actually went down. You've got a... And the thing is, we do live in a world where MK Ultra and all these other projects did occur. So this guy could have done it. And maybe he's part of a larger intelligence operation. I don't know. It's still early days here. I'm not ready to make sweeping conclusions any more than I'm ready to just say Israel killed him. A lot of people are willing to say that. I think I see a PR campaign. I see the fact that this man was shot and the way that he was shot brings a lot of new eyeballs onto his work. And we have to ask, what was his work? Where was he going? What was he saying in the weeks leading up to this? I mean, here's a guy who was looking to primary Lindsey Graham out of existence. I don't think I've heard a single person talking about that just yet. Taking out Lindsey Graham is one of the principal neocon, pro-Israel, anti-Iran voices. Like, this guy is the linchpin in the current neocon way of looking at the world. And Charlie Kirk was committed to destroying him. He was actually saying that if Lindsey Graham doesn't get primaried out of existence, then there is no free and fair elections left in the United States. That's a pretty powerful thing. Now, Lindsey Graham questioning the narrative on Israel, questioning, you know, other narratives, calling things into question, telling too much truth, basically. So I think you see a PR campaign to try and own the legacy. That's what I'm willing to firmly say at this point. I mean, the evidence seems to suggest very clearly that that is, one way or another, what we're seeing. Maybe there's more to it. Again, I weigh information. That's why I've waited this long to even record my thoughts on this. But it's a matter of owning the legacy. All of these new eyes pouring over everything Charlie Kirk did, pouring over Turning Point, this motivation, this clear-cut example of how very different the right or the good people or whatever you want to call the side that would support Charlie Kirk versus the reaction, the hate of the other side. These people, I'm not going to show it. I'm just going to keep talking. The very same people are cheering and hugging in reaction to Luigi Mangione, if I'm pronouncing that right, Mangione, having his terrorism charges dropped. The murder count will stand. Free Luigi. Everybody's calling for this guy to be free. He shot a guy in cold blood. He shot a CEO in cold blood. He shot a prominent public figure in cold blood. There's been a lot of people getting shot in cold blood. It's not coming from the right. The right didn't burn down a single city block. The good, whoever, whatever you want to call the side, the people reacting in anger to Charlie Kirk channeled it constructively, peacefully, didn't burn anything down, didn't commit counter acts of violence. They don't want to. The left and right, good and evil, are not the same. And I think the alignment, the left-right axis, is becoming far more about good and evil than it is anything else. Because those are the real forces that drive this world forward. Those are the real forces around which all historical events turn. And they morph and they change and they flow into and out of culture and into and out of politics and political thought and the things that we talk about. And right now we see this marriage between liberalism and so-called progressivism and very evil tendencies. Narcissistic tendencies, materialistic tendencies, selfish tendencies, violence, the ends justifying the means at all cost. So at any rate, Charlie Kirk was running counter-narrative. And a lot of the stuff that he's saying that I've heard, because like I said, I've gone a little bit deeper the last couple days than I normally would. I mean, we were in alignment on so many things, which... It gave me a moment's pause. Somebody in the comments section said, Frank, you're in danger. I don't think I'm in danger like Charlie Kirk is, because he was very popular. very popular. I'm small potatoes. Most people just want to ignore me and pretend I don't exist. There's a lot of people who watch my videos, won't acknowledge me in public, won't even so much as give me a like. It's kind of funny how it all goes. I know they watch, but whatever. I do what I do. Charlie was in a position to activate not just young men, but young white men, whose value has been under constant assault. Now, this is accepting the label white based on skin pigment. The label itself, white men, is a denial of individuated identity. But you see, the conversation is bounded in linguistic terms. You want to talk about sorcery. You want to talk about what magic actually is. It's words and how we use words. The left, they are far better sorcerers than the right. But Charlie Kirk was a very effective sorcerer himself when it comes to words. Don't take that too literally. It's about what you can do with your words. And he was dialed into young people in a way that most people can't comprehend. And that's why he was truly dangerous. And he had a warning for the world on top of everything else I've talked about here. He said that essentially the baby boomers were a very materialistic, self-serving generation. And it continues to this day. Every single time you see a baby boomer get on a cruise ship or go on a vacation, the young who can't even afford, they're buying their pizzas using buy now, pay later programs. So it's like they're not even using credit cards anymore. They're getting their pizza and they're paying $5 for that pizza for 4 months in a row. And if they miss a payment on their pizza, they're getting dinged with all kinds of fees. They're getting raked in a whole new way. They feel like they have no future. The men have been feminized. The women have been masculinized. Everything is upside down. Nothing works. Everything's broken. Instead of having young men going into the trades and actually pursuing that, trades have been demeaned. Construction's been demeaned for years. Public servants and people in education have looked with scorn on the working man. If you're in a sewer and you're cleaning out a clogged pipe, you have to stay in school so that you don't have to do that job, even though that man might be perfectly happy, building a perfectly happy family, maybe making more money than you. He's looked down on with scorn. The people who keep the lights on, the people who keep the toilets flushing, the people who keep the water coming out of your taps are looked on with derision. And this has affected young white men more than anybody else. At the same time, they're being told that they are expendable, they're useless. The dating pool has been completely screwed up. It's really bad. It's really bad. Mr. Kirk was tied into that. He understood that, and he understood where it went, echoing some of the warnings that I've made on my own channel about the impending rise of radicalism, socialist radicalism. We are back to the dichotomy, the traditional dichotomy between international socialism and national socialism. It's like a repeat with vastly different circumstances. So there are people in the world who want to restore the value of the nation state and a new multipolar order that can generate prosperity for the young. And then there are those who are dedicated to the international order, which is based on old thinking. It's based on entitlement. It's based on selfishness. It's based on narcissism. It's based on this idea of androgyny being that destroying individuation in the West and celebrating individuation of culture in every other part of the world is somehow going to lead to and maybe they don't even care if it leads to a good outcome. Like maybe they don't even care. They're throwing darts at the wall, hoping something sticks because they really have no idea what's going on. They're dying out too, right? This generation of people who have been in power for a long time and have dedicated and bent the arms of power towards their own ends, they stopped having children too. So they're faced with the same demographic problems that everybody else is. But at any rate, Kirk was in a position at 31 years old with a beautiful family, a leading example. I mean, one of the other things that he was talking about was Epstein. And you have to be a fool. You have to be a light-blinded fool to not come to the firm and concrete conclusion that Epstein had deep ties to the intelligence community, whether the CIA or Mossad, mainly Mossad. He got his start from people who were tied to Mossad. I mean, come on. It doesn't matter the copious volumes of word salad that comes out of politicians and the people who are at the moment standing in the way of actually finding out what Epstein was all about. And I mean, it doesn't matter how much they pour a coating of words on it. It is what it is. And Kirk saw that. You know, he saw that. These are dangerous things to see for people in his position. So powerful was he. So dialed in was he. Challenging. Going to the – you understand – the importance of the universities and public education when it comes to indoctrination, when it comes to indoctrinating a nation. We've known this since Prussian times. The Prussians were the ones that gave us public schooling. It was about regimenting society for Prussia around a militarized society. Look what they built with it. So the schools ever since have become an ideological battleground. And it's never been more intense than it is in 2025. So what was Kirk doing? First off, he was married. He had kids. These weren't polygamists. These were traditionalists with traditional values. They lived it. He was beyond blackmail. At least it certainly seems he was beyond blackmail. He was certainly beyond reproach. They had resorted to inviting him to private gatherings and berating him for his views, threatening his funding, trying to undermine him. But it doesn't appear they could blackmail him. Show me anywhere that they could. I'm willing to look at that evidence. I'm not saying that everything and what I'm saying is firm and right. This is why I don't react quickly, because I like to think about things. I like to know what I'm talking about. So a traditional man beyond the reach of the Epsteins of the world, dialed in, going to universities, almost like Jesus. Like there's parallels here, and I'm not trying to lionize the guy too much, but it's going to sound like I am, and so I'm just going to say what I got to say. You know, Jesus went to each and every town. He sat outside the town. He invited people to come and see him. He wasn't forceful. He just went there and allowed people to come and listen. Now, Charlie, you can argue he took it a step further. He went into the den of evil. He went into the manufacturing colonies of this ideological miasma that we find ourselves in right now, this counter-natural destructive chaos thing that is coming out of culture and coming out of education. He went into the dens and he gave them a microphone and he talked to them reasonably. And he did it every day. And he was effective. He was changing minds. And he was screwing up the ideological factory. He was screwing up the future. Gen Z is becoming radicalized. The powers that be want them radicalized in a certain direction, in a direction that creates mass confusion. I mean, you look at the state of psychology, where basically every disorder that a person experiences, from depression to manic to all these things, are incurable and must be treated for the rest of your life. You'll never escape them. You got to be on pills. You look at what you're taught in public school about the gender unicorn and all this other nonsense. It's all very divisive. It's all fragmentary. It's designed to set you at war with your reason internally inside of here. It's to ensure a constant state of discord so that the society is malleable, the society is distracted, the society can be easily ruled. And this trajectory is being disrupted by the Charlie Kirks of the world. The young generation is looking to go in a different direction. And if they don't, another thing that Kirk understood is that if we don't fix things, if we don't restore prosperity, if we don't create some kind of order, talking about the North American order here, I don't want to put those words in his mouth. I actually haven't heard him talk about that yet. But this North American order of prosperity and building things is about saving the future and saving us from going down a really dark path towards a radicalism like was seen in the 1920s and the 1930s. Because, you know, even if you call him a fake socialist, the rise of the guy who is poised to maybe become mayor of New York, an open socialist, and you look at some of the rhetoric coming out of the Democrat Party, and you realize there's a very open, communistic, violent, latent, not even latent, like picture it like a pot of water. You know, you're bringing a pot of water to the boil. We're at the point where you can see the bubbles forming on the bottom of the pot and the occasional bubble comes up. Like we're already there. We're at the point where things turn quite quickly in terms of historical perspective, in terms of timeline. Like we're at the – if you're talking about a steady decline on a chart that goes straight down, we're almost to the cliff. That's what Kirk was warning about, and that's what he was trying to save everybody from. He was in a very powerful position. There were a lot of people with a lot of incentive to silence him in one way or another. I don't think you need, and maybe there's more complexity to be found, but I mean, a lot of the things that I'm seeing out there are just blind speculation. There's issues with the rifle and how long it would take him to disassemble it. And did he take the barrel off? And there's, you know, finding the screwdriver and the DNA and all this stuff. This is stuff I hope that we see ironed out. Like, you got to just wait. I'm not going to sit here and try and provide answers I don't have. So some issues around that. But I don't think anything that I've seen dissuades me from thinking we have a single shooter, that it was left-leaning, ideologically motivated. This guy had... I don't think I need to rehash the details. We're talking about somebody the left wing ideology got to in university and radicalized. And maybe there's more to that story, but I think it's enough. And you could say that maybe he was used by the intelligence community, and I think you should keep investigating and looking for problems and all of these things. But Charlie Kirk was a threat to a lot of individual interests. Kind of like JFK, who was in 1963 screwing with a lot of where the established order of things, the bureaucratic state, the administrative state was trying to take the United States, countering a lot of that. I'm reading a book right now about JFK and Bobby's attempted pivot on U.S. foreign policy. And who that put them in the crosshairs of. It's interesting reading. It's interesting thought. I'm sure I'll expand on it later. I don't have much more to say about it right now. I think Charlie Kirk, for the next little while, is going to be more powerful than he ever was in life. And I think that's where I'm going to leave it.